Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night, wherever you are in the world. It's great to see people from Singapore, Charlotte, Zurich, the Riviera, Oklahoma City, and all over the world. Welcome to this, the 10th Corporate Jet Investor Town Hall. Is it really 10 weeks? Just 10 weeks we've been in lockdown for? It feels like a lot longer. This week, we're going to focus on innovation, how companies are reinventing business into innovation, both before and after the crisis. We've got a fantastic panel of speakers from an OEM, flight safety, auction, finance, and much, much more. I'm going to hand over straight to our first guest. Delighted to have James Prater. James is Vice President of Customer Service Business Aviation at Rolls-Royce, aviation enthusiastic, mechanic, pilot, maintenance manager, and also a drummer. James, how are you?
Hey, I am great. Thanks, Alistair.
Great. And I'm glad we can connect, because this is a innovation one is just asking for everything to, all the tech to go wrong. One of the really cool things you guys have announced in the last few weeks is virtual reality training, maintenance training. How does this work?
Yeah, we're really pleased to be bringing this to the industry at this time. Amazing timing for us, and so we're thrilled about this. And what this is a virtual reality hood, some eye goggles that we'll send out, and a laptop, and we'll arrange a time where then we'll get live stream audio and video with a live instructor, and we'll familiarize the student with the BR725 engine, the engine itself, its major components, and also the routine service items.
So do they need an engine, or they literally can do it in a room with just the goggles?
Literally in a room with just the goggles, and you'll have a couple of handles that you can reach out and grab components and take them off and rotate them around. You can, in fact, read the serial numbers off of the fan blades when you take the fan blades out. It's truly phenomenal. I'm very pleased with it.
How long have you been working on it for?
Actually, it was very short term. We were able to turn this one around in 6 months. That is thanks to a lot of groundwork that was already laid by some of our other programs, other power plant programs that have done some similar work. And so this one came together in 6 months.
And did you accelerate it because of COVID?
Yeah, we absolutely did. We were getting down to the finish line. And then as everybody started distancing, we all started working remotely from home and whatever, that added some extra challenges and obstacles that we really had to drive through. But we were able to get that done in a very timely fashion and bring this to the industry.
How good is it? Is it, yeah, presumably it's not a replacement for actually getting a hands onto a real engine.
Right. Absolutely not. We would love to have people face to face and be able to interact with people on a live engine. However, this really is some very good video tech, and it really does clearly and accurately represent our engine. And so I think what we've heard from customers who've already tried this, they absolutely love it. They think this is the way of the future. They value the training. They feel confident when they step out to the aircraft now, and they're not just looking at a brand new engine. Now they're familiar with what some of these components are and how things are arranged and how to approach it.
Okay, so this is one part of what you're calling your intelligent engine vision. What else is included in that?
So this is training towards that. The intelligent engine vision really takes, if you consider maybe a Venn diagram, and you've got the product, you've got the service, and then you've got a digital environment for that. And you overlap those, and we're merging those three areas, the product, service, and the digital. And the vision is to have connectivity so that all of the engines are talking to each other. And you're receiving and sending data to other data sources. The engines are comprehending, so they're actually learning from other engines and from the fleet. And then also there's a contextual component as well, so that we can understand the operating environment of the engine. We can understand how it's been operated within the parameters, how and where it's been maintained. And all of this data compiles to give us a better database to make analytical decisions. Also, then we can push out analytics through some of the electronic components, and we can actually look at what's going on. We can query the engine. We can maybe make a few software changes to improve performance or whatever is needed, or we can send maintenance information.
How far away are we from 0% unscheduled maintenance?
Oh, wow. How far away? I don't know that I can answer that accurately, but I would say we're within years. We're within a few, just a couple years. Where, you know, most of our engines today are on condition, right? The older fleet is still a hard time fleet, but on condition. And we're doing this today, right? So we're already talking to these engines. We're already getting trend monitoring. So it's not going to be too long, other than, you know, your routine service. You got to change the oil. You got to do these basic things, right? But when it comes to the shop visits, yeah, I would say the majority of the fleet's already turning on condition.
How else have you guys adapted to the to the COVID lockdown around the world?
I tell you, it has changed our service platform for sure. Our vision and our strategy has been to maintain our level of service to our operators. With the international travel restrictions especially, that's been very difficult. But domestically, in each of the countries in which we have people based, we've been able to meet 100% of the demand of customer requests for maintenance and servicing during this downtime. You know, of course, the social distancing rules and the cleanliness rules apply, right? So we've done that. Our technicians are screening the customers. So it's all working. We're very pleased with how we've been able to support our customers.
Sorry, one of my sound effects went off by accident, but I realized it's like one of the key things is money, money, money. And you're seeing the fleet, you're seeing people wanting to fly now and that going up.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're particularly hearing that in the States, and we're seeing that in Asia as well. There's some other parts of the world that aren't quite waking up in business aviation yet, but we are seeing an uptick. And we've, in fact, for 7 weeks running, we've seen an uptick in engine flying hours overall.
Brilliant. Thanks, James, so much. Really appreciate you coming on, and look forward to trying out the virtual reality one day. Thank you.
Thanks for your time.
Great, thank you. And so now we've heard from an OEM, we're delighted to go to across the pond from Washington to Dublin, looking in front of a very impressive tapestry, Stephen Kelly, Global Sales Director. That was James Prater, Vice President of Customer Service, Business Innovation, Rolls-Royce. So thank you to him. We're now delighted to go to Stephen Kelly, Global Sales Director, Global AVX in Dublin.
How are you? Good afternoon.
Very well, how are you?
I'm Dublin.
So Stephen started out in IT, then worked in just-in-time logistics, including launching his own company. He's now part of the team launching Global AVX, the first dedicated aviation auction platform. And he also has a six-week-old baby. So if he falls asleep during this, we'll all forgive you.
Thanks, Arlo. Yeah. Power of coffee has never been more powerful than it is right now, you know?
So, Stephen, what is Global AVX? How does it work?
Well, what we're seeing is that in the new normal, there is a massive desire to do business aviation transactions. Indeed, I see Fabrizio Poli from BizJet TV, and recently I watched a video, and we found that there are over 518,000 ultra-high net worth individuals, and only 3.5% of them own private jets. With the new normal, a lot more people will want to go private and not commercial. But also, there is money that has never been put into business aviation that wants to get in there. So what we do is we make it efficient, streamlined, and transparent. We make that process via our online auction platform. We make that as easy as possible now. So what we do is we allow the global marketplace determine what the value and price of the aviation asset is. And like all good auctions, you want to get as many bidders as possible into the auction. What we do prior to auction is we first of all make sure the bidders that want to bid on the plane, so we do the AML and the KYC, we fund approve them and pre-approve them and ask them to lodge a certain amount of money in escrow. Once they've completed that process, they have access to our data rooms and they can interrogate the technical and legal documents and do their due diligence. So we're asking each and every one of our bidders to invest time, money, and effort so that when auction takes place, Al, they're ready to go. They're motivated, they're global, they have different motivations depending on where they are in the world. And then we put on the auction for a minimum of 2 days, 48 hours. That gives us enough time to go around the world and back again over a two-day process. But because it's completely customized, we can add an elective that if there is a frenzy of bidding towards the end of the 2 days, we can extend it for another hour. And once the final bid, the winning bid, the highest bid is achieved, you've got a further 2 days for the vendor and the winning bidder to exchange documents and digitally sign those documents, and the sale is agreed there. What after that happens, Al, is that you get a transparency report, and the transparency report shows the whole process from start to finish, A to Z, of how that price was achieved. And the other bidders that weren't successful, their money that has been held in escrow is immediately transferred back to them. So that's kind of what we're all about. We're all about making the ability to do business aviation transactions as easy, efficient, streamlined, and transparent as possible.
So that's fascinating. So the idea is to try and create the Christie's or the Sotheby's for business aviation?
Yeah, I'm delighted to mention that, Al, because I've been reading reports about those big auction houses, and what they have seen is in this marketplace with all of us at home, and me, as you can see in my palatial mansion behind me, what everybody wants to do, Al, is they want to bid on high ticket items. And those big auction houses have been achieving prices that they never thought they were going to achieve prior to this pandemic.
Although, interestingly, our auctions are notoriously opaque and difficult. Yeah. Okay, we have a lot of brokers watching now. Coming into the market to try and take them out, to push them out of the business aviation community?
Oh, no, absolutely not, Al. We're actually a complement. We're a business tool to help them do more deals. Indeed, because we reach out to a global marketplace, we can turn a local broker into a global broker. And also, if there is excess inventory that they might currently have, it's a very efficient way to get that excess inventory moved on through auction. Indeed, I see Andrew and Keith Hopkinson on the call there, and we're delighted to say that we have an auction coming up with Hopkinson over the next couple of months. So watch this space, Al.
Okay. Other people have tried to auction business aircraft, and often the auction is the last resort. When everything else has failed or when an aircraft's been repossessed. What's different now?
Well, prior to COVID-19, the way of doing business was very much face-to-face. Documents were sent via airplanes, and documents were signed in wet ink and witnessed as and when you want to be witnessed. But the new normal is, as we can see from being on Crowdcast today, is that we're doing business online, and we're comfortable to do business online. And we're also comfortable to sign documents digitally. But also, because of this pandemic has caused so much of a hit to business aviation, and also not many transactions have been done, we actually do not really know what the price of these assets are. What our auction platform does is allow the global marketplace to determine what the price of these assets are. It sets a floor, and that should start business going again. And we see a domino effect and more auctions happening in the future. Indeed, Al, going back to my original point of making it more efficient, streamlined, and transparent to do business aviation deals, I see Eric Lewin and Clay Healy from Global Closing Room, and we're in discussions to form strategic partners with these guys as well and other people.
I tell you what, you're very good at reading down the side at the same time.
Thanks, Al, yeah.
How do you think OEMs, this is a question from Perla in Argentina, how do you think OEMs see global AVX?
Well, the point of the matter is anything that makes it easier to do deals, be it in commercial. I mean, we're based in Dublin, Ireland, and over 70% of all commercial transactions are done in this country. And so we have a rich tapestry. We have a rich DNA of doing deals like this. Indeed, I had a great conversation with some OEMs when we were able to see each other face to face in January in the Shelburne Hotel. And they were very, very keen to look at using us in the future to launch their new platform. So that's another thing to watch this space as well.
Okay, that's great. And final question from Malachi, at Mount Aviation. Can you repeat your stat about ultra high net worth penetration?
Well, this comes from Fabrizio Poli, who's in on the call at the moment from BizJet TV. He talked about over 518,000 ultra high net worth individuals. And the crazy thing about this, only 3.5% of them own a private jet.
Okay, brilliant. That's fantastic. Thank you. Another question
from Darwin. Okay.
Are these auctions specified as absolute aircraft we sold for X price, or reserve owner reserves the right to refuse to sell for that price?
It all depends. We work with our client to make that decision happen and possible. So we're very, very flexible in which way to do that.
Okay, that's great. Thanks so much
for
coming in. And we hope you get some sleep tonight.
Cheers, Al. Thank you so much for having me on board.
Okay, Brent. Thanks very much, Steve. That's Stephen Kelly, Global Sales Director, Global AVX in Dublin. Right, we're now going to try and go to Andrew Douglas in Braemar, Director at Aircraft Charter and Management Company, Air Advantage, Director of Pretium Jet Charter and Make Tech Fly. Andrew's coming to us from the east coast of Scotland. Braemar is a town set in the beautiful MacKengall Mountains. It's also close to Dundee, which is often referred to as the Venice of Scotland. Sorry, I mispronounced that. It's referred to as the Menace of Scotland. Andrew, how are you?
And I hope you hear me okay. As you know, one of the biggest exports from Dundee is the Beano
Prime
and the Dandy. So it has a fantastic rich history for finding mischievous people. I'm actually living in Blairgowrie, which is slightly to the northwest of Dundee. Still close enough to be able to get there and drop my daughter.
So great to see the banner behind.
Thank you. I followed your lead for the corporate logo. I didn't think you wanted to see the wall of my shed. So this is far more important. And if the tech dropped out, I was just going to hide and leave that for everyone to read it later on.
One of the things your Make Tech Fly, bringing your slogan is bringing useful tech and AI to the private and charter aviation sectors. Can you give us an example?
Well, Anaero is our first example of this. There's a lot of technology kicking about for people. And one of the things that we see in the technology world is that there is a lot of people who are like me who probably aren't the most tech minded, and therefore some of the technology products that people use and try and sell aren't the most user friendly. So one of the mantras of Make Tech Fly is also to make tech easy and to bring appropriate tech into the right places.
As soon as you say tech, it starts flickering. What's Anaero? Take us through that. And how did you come up with the idea for it?
Well, as you know, and as you mentioned, most people will know me for the Air Advantage company, which is my overarching company. But we also have the Pretium Jet Charter company. And that handles all of our aircraft and helicopter charter. And we do a very good line in whiskey tours around Scotland when we're allowed to.
John Farish has already asked, when does that open up?
Good man. Can I reciprocate for the favour for John with my Better Beaver water bottle? But at least I have one friend in America at the moment. It's good. So the Anaero came from a curious incident where we had a client phone up wanting to make a change to the catering request of one of their flights. Now, that's not out of the ordinary, but the trouble was they were in Los Angeles and I was back home in the UK. So the phone call came through at 1 a.m. And the situation was that one of the guests on the flight admitted, having done an outbound flight with us, admitted that they didn't want to go on the return flight because we had fish on the menu and they were allergic to fish. So you change the menu and you think, okay, that's not a problem. At 1 a.m, it's you know, it's sort of normal time in the evening time in Los Angeles. So you get that sorted. I went and spoke to the guest of the client and we had a very British conversation where I said, I'm very sorry we put fish on the menu, and he said, I'm very sorry, I didn't tell you I had an allergy. I said, I'm very sorry that the email we sent saying, does anybody have any allergies, wasn't clear. And he said, no, it's very fine. I'm just very sorry that I didn't respond to that email because I didn't want to make any will work for you. So after that lovely British, everyone apologising to everybody, I sat on the train back home and thought, how can we make this better? And we started to look at the catering request and the passenger catering form. But then you start to look at the problems that annoy you in the air charter business. And you say, well, I don't like this piece. I don't like that piece. And by the time the train got me back to back to Dundee before I got the bus home, I had the entire air charter process mapped out on a table. And from that, we looked at all the choke points in the process. We looked at all the touch points from the customer's point of view. We looked at where we get conflict and contention, and we looked at the number of emails around a certain topic. So we found that on average it takes about 15 emails to sort out catering on an aircraft. It can take about 3 or 4 emails per person to sort out getting the passport data. And we looked at all these pain points and identified where they were. We then drew out our own solution for what could be the most efficient way of doing the whole process. And we mapped the two. And having that architecture to design out the pain points gave us the basis for the Anaero system. From that, we then managed to develop a MVP, and we brought that down to show people at the Airbus Expo last year. We asked a lot of other brokers and a lot of our broker friends what their issues were, and they were very similar. We asked a lot of our corporate flight department friends what their pain points were. And again, there was a similar recurring pattern in all the administration points that people were trying to do. So, therefore, from that, we extended the Anaero system to cover everything from the start of a process when somebody says, I want to fly on an aircraft, be it privately or be it charter, through to that aircraft departing. So our software starts off with the client. It works for the broker. It works for the operator. It's got links into FBOs, the crews, and also with doing some work at the moment in development with regulatory authorities to ensure that the data flows are smooth, seamless, and as accurate as they can be.
I think I think we got most of that answer. We're having issues with the, I think someone's probably stolen the fiber cables. What we'll do is I might come back to you if that's okay. And if not, we'll get on the next one because now you're perfect.
I tell you what, is it possibly apologies then, I shall do the horrible thing of putting your hand in front of your face so that you you can pick up the microphone better. Is that clear for everybody?
That is a lot better. Okay, so
right,
how's it
I'm
going?
Not picking my You've nose, I am holding a microphone.
How's it going? How's it been adopted?
Well, the feedback has been brilliant, very, very positive. We take the current situation in our stride as best we can. When we had the MVP, we showed it to a corporate flight department who said, right, okay, we want it now. So we got it to them in December last year. And then we prepared to go out to Sheds and Dispatches in March. And to those who attended Sheds and Dispatches, nice to say hello again. But whilst we had a great time in Charlotte, and it's a wonderful city, as you know, that was the start of Trump closing the American borders, flights been cancelled, show was curtailed, and everybody headed home. We came back to the first week of having to sort out and rearrange all the cancelled charter flights for the Apretium side. And then we've had to basically concentrate on getting the systems out ready for the people who are looking to use it. It's been a very, as I think a lot of people have found, it's been a very careful process of trying to sell a new product at a time when a lot of people are on furlough or a lot of companies are taking government support or are unsure of how the business will recover in the near term. But unfortunately, one thing that hasn't stopped is the amount of cyber attacks and phishing emails that go out to people. And this is one of the sort of the main tenets of our system, is that because it's a SaaS, we have levels of I don't want to open myself up to interrogation here, but we've looked very hard with cybersecurity consultants about all the types of threats and or the way to mitigate and manage those threats. So the three things that we've concentrated on with the system are a secure system, a simple system for everyone to use, mainly through mobiles, but also through desktop and laptops, and a visible system so that everyone has a visibility of the flights and the flight data as the process is being built up.
Okay. Are there any other problems you think people should be looking at in business aviation to solve?
There's quite a few. And one of the things we want Make Tech Fly to do is to be a supporter and an incubator of some of those ideas. We've had a couple of chats with some good friends who said, oh, I'd like to do X, Y, and Z when I retire, or I'd like to do this type of thing. And I think this would be great for the DA market, or I think this would be great for the FBO side of life. And for some of these companies or some of these ideas, it might be too small to go it alone. But one of the things we want to do is work with them and see whether their idea could be latched onto another product, or it could be an API interface, or it could be some other form of solution engineering. I would like it if everybody keeps thinking of an idea, because it's only through innovation and ideas that we're actually going to change what we do. One of my most pleasing bits of feedback was that recently somebody said, we've taken the datedness out of the air charter. And that's for me was pleasing, because it's an industry that's been going on for a good few years now, have been disruptors, and I take my hat off to those people who've managed to truly buck the trend and change the system. But there's a lot of people who've got some brilliant ideas that just aren't seeing the light of day. And the point about Make Tech Fly is we'd like to help them get a platform and get out there.
That's brilliant. Thanks, Andrew. And I should point out that actually you are in a beautiful part of the world, and everyone should be out visiting.
They should do. One of the best ones is Dundee. Within 10 miles of Dundee, you have some of the best golf courses in the world. You've got some brilliant museums. And you've even got things like Scott's ship, the Discovery, if you're into polar exploration.
And it's also the city my dad's from. So thanks very much, Andrew.
A pleasure. Talk soon.
Thank you. That was Andrew Douglas in Braemar, director of Make Tech Fly. Thanks very much. And now, because it's easy, we're sticking with Andrews. Delighted to go to Andrew Nicholson, who's CEO of Osprey Flight Solutions, also in the UK, although south. Andrew, the other Andrew, was in the armed forces. Andrew Nicholson spent 12 years in the British Navy, half of it working with special forces. He then worked for a maritime security company before joining International SOS and Control Risks, where he specialized in aviation security. And in 2017, you launched Osprey Flight Solutions to help the industry identify and understand risks to make flying safer. Is that a good introduction, Andrew?
It's a great introduction. Thank you very much indeed. It's a real pleasure to be here. I hope you can all hear me, and I hope the tech stands up. It's great to have a session on innovation when technology works. So
I know, we're just asking for trouble. Do you want to explain Osprey Flight Solutions to everyone and what it was when you first launched it?
Yeah, sure. So what do? We help the industry and the aviation industry as a whole understand or better understand the environment in which it operates from a risk perspective. And when I say the aviation industry, you know, that is everything from, of course, the business community, but airlines, government organizations, industry bodies, regulating bodies, you name it. We're supporting in helping the industry to understand the risk, to understand what incidents, events might impact operations globally, so that they can put in place mitigation measures, so they can make decisions based on that risk to minimize operational disruption and the other, obviously, the other impacts of risk.
So I get your emails every day, and I recommend them, because although you do realize what a scary world it is and how, you know, rebels are shooting down drones and aircraft are being seized and aircraft are being detained in Nigeria. You've adapted your business, though, a lot to COVID-19, haven't you, in the last few weeks?
Yeah, we have. I mean, I think it's worth saying that you know, what something's enabled us to do that is the way that we approach risk in a different way. I mean, there are plenty of organisations that provide risk management support, even to the aviation industry. Plenty of companies do that. The difference between what we do and what they do is that the vast majority, if not all of those organisations, are consultancy based. So you have an analyst that will sit behind a computer and source information and then write a report on a particular situation. What we do is gather huge amounts of data, and we use that data to understand the environment, and we use that data to look at trends and patterns. And what that allows us to do is to remove the subjectivity of the human analyst to a large extent out of the equation. It also allows us to be more proactive. So in terms of COVID-19, what that has meant is that we've been able to pull in data relating to COVID-19, relating to the pandemic, relating to the response to the pandemic, which of course is almost the more important aspect, and how that has impacted the aviation industry, and then deliver that to the aviation industry in a way that that maximizes the utility, that makes it as easy as possible to use. So just as an example, but the key thing that we've done, we launched a new platform in March this year. Now, clearly, we had designed and planned this platform well before COVID-19 was a global issue, and well before the pandemic had really hit globally. But it turned out to be a perfect platform to get data on the pandemic, COVID, the virus itself, and how cases were occurring around the world, but also how the world was responding to that through in the aviation sector, through NOTAMs, through travel restrictions, through biosecurity and biosafety measures, and how they're being implemented around the world. So we launched open, and we very quickly added a huge amount of COVID-19 data as overlaid onto this platform. Now, the great thing about open is it's completely free to use. Anybody can access it. And there is a huge amount of data on there which really helps people to understand the environment and understand the risks they face, not just COVID-19, but the other risks that they face in their operations. And I think the key thing that we've focused on is really how we can best help the industry get back in the air as quickly as possible. That's the important thing right now. That's what we're all trying to do. That's what we all desperately need, is aircraft back in the air, people flying again, the industry growing again. That's exactly what we need, and that is what we have focused on within Open to ensure that happens. There is one more piece, though, and sorry for rabbiting on a little bit, but there is one more bit to this, and that is that airlines and business jet operators and the industry as a whole have suffered significantly through a lack of reward. You know, they've suffered because commercially their businesses have suffered, and then because of that, they've had to reduce their resources, their personnel. Therefore, the focus on risk management has understandably reduced. And yet there's a huge amount of stuff going on around the world that has a massive impact, or has a potential massive impact on aviation. We need to keep an eye on those things so that when people do start flying again, we know what's going on in the world, and people can have that global picture and manage their risks properly on that day that they get their aircraft back up in the air.
So how do you keep up with it's changing hour by hour, isn't it, with companies changing rules and introducing or restrictions or getting rid of them? How do you keep up to date with that?
So that's exactly what our platform does. That's what it was designed to do right from the word go, from before we launched it in 2017. It's designed to pick up those changes automatically, and it's a software that does that, picks up those changes automatically, and through AI machine learning, categorizing and identifying what those changes are, applying them into the right area of risk, and then highlighting them through a number of different delivery mechanisms, one of which you see our daily emails. But there's a number of different delivery mechanisms that we provide, but it's the software that does that. And of course, the software is able to look at 200,000 different sources of data in 65 different languages about every 15 minutes, and that's what it does. So it very quickly picks up these changes and the way that things are adapting and moving as they are so quickly right now. And we have our team of analysts that then quality control that to make sure that the system isn't being subject to things like fake news or circular reporting, but the data coming in is accurate and objective, and therefore we can get that sort of analytics, the trends, the patterns, the forward-looking stuff out to the industry.
Here's a question which looks like it's a setup. I'm sure it's not. How can operators best use Osprey.open during this challenging time?
it may be a setup. I don't know. How can they best use it? I mean, the important thing is to get in there and get using it. There is a massive amount of information in there. And one of the things that we produce is a weekly report. It's called a weekly change report. And what that does, it highlights any country that has changed its position regards to the pandemic and its response to the pandemic in terms of, has it released or issued new NOTAMs? Has it changed its stance on biosecurity or biosafety measures? Has it changed its travel restrictions? What do the cases look like? Are cases going up or going down in COVID-19 cases? And what do aviation departures look like, aircraft departures? Are they increasing or are they decreasing or staying fairly static? And this report comes out, well, in fact, you can go onto the system and pull it every day if you want to, but we publish it through LinkedIn every week that demonstrates, you know, every country that's made a change in any of those aspects over the last 7 days. So that really, in one piece of paper, shows you globally where things are changing, where things are increasing or decreasing. And it's a really powerful tool to be able to identify where operations are increasing. So I think that's one of the key things. And the other thing to mention is that we have done a number of webinars helping people to get the most out of open. You can access them. If you look at Osprey Flight Solutions LinkedIn, there's a number of links in there that will show you that, you know, you'll be able to get to those webinars and watch them, because that really does help people to get the most out of open. To use the different data sets. There's a whole bunch of different data sets you can overlay on top of each other to understand the environment, both from a COVID-19 perspective, but also from a more general aviation security perspective.
That's great. Okay, final question. How do you leave the house? Like, you spend all your day looking at scary news around the world.
The point about risk is that ignorance, to me, having been in risk management for many, many years, ignorance of risk is a more concerning thing to me than knowledge that a risk exists. If I know something exists, then I can do something about it. I can put in place mitigating measures and I can be comfortable that I've done everything I can to manage that risk. If I don't feel well informed about what those risks are, it makes me nervous because I feel like I don't know what's going on, and I therefore don't know whether I've put in place those measures that allow me to reduce that risk to an acceptable level. So being better informed is the way that's what allows me to go out of the house every day, if you like.
And go on, Holly. Thanks so much. That was Andrew Nicholson, CEO of Osprey Flight Solutions. And I really do recommend your emails. Thanks very much. Okay, we have another innovator with nice branding behind. Absolutely delighted to have Paolo Sommariva, CEO of Flex. Paolo's a serial entrepreneur, and he, you name it, he's been involved in seaplanes, regional airlines, and he's co-founder of Flex, which is a... Wait, tell us, what is Flex, Paolo?
Well, good afternoon, Alan. Good morning for those joining from the US, and thank you for this this nice introduction. Yes, Flex, we founded it 10 years ago. It was just a few days ago. It was our 10th anniversary. So to remind us that, thank you. Time flies. What Flex does is it's a full range online solution to manage jet airlines. And it does that under various business models. So it includes private charter, corporate flight department, medevac operations, cargo, trip support companies. We support the entire range of business models in business aviation and a little bit outside as well. So it includes quoting, duty times, maintenance, rostering, you name it. We cover all the bases in the operations and sales and management, along with reporting. And on top of that, we have over 50 integrations running with a whole wide range of external providers like Camp, Booking.com, Universal Weather, Drivania, all the flight planning solutions, etc.
So you're gonna upset people you didn't mention, but we haven't got time to do 50. You've been doing some very cool things with 3D walkthroughs of aircraft. How does that work?
Well, actually, this is in the chapter of integrations. You know, I strongly believe in integration because nobody can do everything. Technology seems easy from a distance, but it's actually very, very complicated to build something in terms of industrial strength. And so this is one integration that we've started towards the end of last year with a product, and the company also is called Matterport. And they provide a software and machines to take pictures in 360 degrees. And they have a network of operators around the world that for actually a very small fee can take a picture, for example, of the interior of your aircraft. And so you have actually a complete walkthrough live system of your aircraft so that you can go from front to back and see every little detail at the click of a mouse or at the tap of your finger. And so what we've done is we've integrated this tool, first of all, in the owner's app. So all our customers, aircraft owners, have an app where they can follow their aircraft, they can do their accounting, et cetera, et cetera. One of the features is now they can actually see their aircraft. They know it, but I guess they want to show it around. And then there is a further utility point is that now when our customers send a quote, they attach a link to the Matterport image so that the broker or the end customer can actually see what the aircraft he's about to charter really looks like.
What other cool things have you been working on?
Well, there is a lot. You know, we send out every 2 weeks an email to our customer with new features, and it's always between 10 and 20. I'm really even impressed myself how much we can pull out. Let me see. I made a few notes because I knew you were going to set up this question here. The next thing is, yeah, the passport scan. It's really cool. And actually, does anyone have a passport here in the room? I don't know if I can show it to you, but so we have an app, right? And thank you, Maho. You can say hello too. This is Maho, who works on the product. Here we have a passport, and I want to board a new customer on my flight, and he came unannounced. And so I don't have him in the Gendeck or in any other documents. And now I just tap boarding. I already have three. I add a new passenger. I create a new passenger. And then I go here, and then I hope there is enough light. We can't get...
I can't believe you're doing an online demonstration on Crowdcast.
Yes, and so here, because it really works. Even demos, right? So here you can't really see because the screen is too bright, but I have Maria Jose Perez Paubella. I won't tell her birth date, but it's all in here, and I add to flight, and I've just added a passenger on my flight. And from this moment, the Gendeck and all the other documents of the flight are updated with the new passenger. So this, I think, is pretty damn cool. And people love it because passengers do show up all the time on the ramp unannounced, right?
What's the biggest problem that hasn't been solved yet in business aviation?
Ooh, empty legs. That's the most costly one.
And why? Can you solve empty legs? I'm always slightly suspicious.
Well, we've been talking about it for, 10 or 20 years.
I think since the Wright brothers.
Right. they had an empty leg carrying the plane back to the ramp. So I think that the big question there is about liquidity, right? You need to have enough liquidity in the market to be able to sell these empty legs. And I think that all the good tries that have been done in the past, always they focused on a single entity effort. So I think that the solution here goes through a the collection of all the empty flights of the market. Now, that's very difficult to organize, but with the new technologies that we have, and I see a lot of innovative marketplaces that are coming up, I think one of them, maybe over the next years, will have a chance to actually solve this for everyone. But as I say, it's probably going to come around in one go, where everybody participates in the same game and provides enough liquidity.
Okay, that's brilliant. Thanks so much, Paolo. And
I have another one, if you have another minute for me, because we're just started something on Friday, and we're providing as of the end of this week C19 testing. And we've added a feature so that we have we found a test that works in 10 minutes. And so the operators can actually give it to their crews so that they can self-test before the flight. Because I discovered there is actually a number of use cases where it's critical that the flight is clean, or where everybody on board is negative. A customer was just telling me the other day they brought some astronauts from Moscow to Berlin, or flights to particularly strict lockdown countries, right? So I think this is a pretty innovative feature and responding to the C19 crisis.
That's very cool, providing the testing works.
Okay.
That's excellent. Thank you so much, Paolo. Great seeing you. And you've got some questions in the question area. People are asking you. So thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Al.
Okay, that was Paolo from Flex. Let's now go to Montreal. We've heard from innovators and designers. We're now delighted to have Charles Porteous, president of Seafeld Group, in beautiful Montreal. Although, actually, one of the things I've been doing is watching Bad Blood on Netflix, so I don't think I'll ever visit again. Way too scary.
Don't come in the winter.
Charles. Charles, you're an expert. You know, you've had a long career in market research and marketing. You were head of marketing at Bombardier, and you've pushed research in business aviation probably more than anyone else I can think of. How does research contribute to innovation? You know, Steve Jobs said people don't know what they want until you show it to them. Can you help?
Well, first off, thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here, and it's great to participate. To answer your question, I think our role is not to do the innovation, which I think is a criticism that Steve Jobs may have had, that you become the research is simply trying to do the innovation for you. Not at all. What in fact we do is we are the catalyst for the innovation. So through a variety of tools, what we do is we actually track needs over time, and needs start to emerge as the marketplace changes, as events take place. And when these needs emerge via the tracking tools we do for our clients, we then take that need and peel back the onion and uncover it and understand it more and better, so that the company and our clients can act on it. And then once they start developing the innovation, we then be able to go back to customers and discuss the innovation with them to help perfect it, to be able to communicate it well, and to show how it creates value added for them. And then once it's out in the marketplace, we can actually get feedback about how it's not just how its sales are performing, which the company itself does, but we also can hear live feedback from customers about how it's performing. And one of the things that we do, which I think is obviously businesses and their salespeople are out there talking to their customers and hearing things, is that we do it in a very systematic, objective, and organized way. So there's hard data, there's kind of a definitive voice about what the customer is saying, so that everybody can kind of rally around the diagnostics and move to the next step.
Do you need to do formal market research, or can I just talk to a few customers over a Zoom call, not, you know, in the old days, over a beer?
Well, let's hope the beer continues at some point. But I think the answer is you need to do both, because the informal conversations help stimulate ideas, but the marketing research helps kind of, as I said, formalize the diagnosis and makes it official, and it also allows it to dig deeper. The thing that you can't, it's hard to do over a beer is to have a formalized, purposeful discussion on a particular topic, as we know. But whereas a marketing research interview or a survey can kind of very much channel the conversation towards everything that you need to find out around the particular topic in order to get the answers you need.
Okay. As a marketer, is business aviation now a mature industry?
I would say very much so. I mean, certainly I've been around in business aviation now more than 20 years. And when I first joined at Bombardier, the industry was growing at a phenomenal rate. There were new actors coming in and deliveries were going up. Now we're seeing, not just because of COVID-19, but overall, the industry is not growing as much. The emerging markets have slowed down and so forth. So the important thing in a mature market is that growing is really people offering kind of new services. And sometimes people, in fact, are doing the same thing, but it seems innovative. But in a mature industry, you have to dig deeper so that what you offer is not commoditized. And I would argue there's a bit of commoditization of services going on in the industry, that people are, although the price is very high, and you think, how could business aviation be commoditized? In fact, people tell us that they can't tell the difference between providers, whether it be in terms of products and services, and even some of the most elite services, sometimes they can't distinguish between the providers. And so in mature industries, it forces the innovation to dig deeper, and it forces it to be more, understand it more profoundly, and what the customer needs are more profoundly.
Do customers know what they want?
No. Customers can tell you what they like, don't like, and why. And they can tell you what they particularly appreciate. And they can also tell you sometimes where the hurdles and bottlenecks are being faced. And that's the researcher's job, is to really not to ask them what they want, but to understand their experience with the product or the service, and allow to by peeling back the onion on that, to give the rich data about how you can better address their needs. So really, we're in the business of identifying needs.
Although one of the problems we have is that it's not beer or washing powder. It's a small group of customers. So is it hard to get the data that really represents something when you have a small user group?
Well, it means you have to work really hard to recruit people. Ironically, we do thousands of surveys a year and hundreds of individual interviews a year, even in business aviation, which is, compared to consumer products, a relatively small industry. So I think that the challenge is,
what research, and a question from Jane, what research should people be doing now?
Project we did where there's kind of a kind of something that was kind of unsaid along the way about in terms of a big customer need. And only when we did the survey did we really find out how important it was. And by finding out how important it was, we then actually gave the organization the motivation to go out and address it. And I think right now in this environment, understanding how people view the product and which value propositions have been strengthened or weakened, and we hear about this a lot in the town halls, which value propositions have been strengthened or weakened relative to each other as a result of COVID-19. So for example, the idea of making sure the aircraft is clean was probably less important before. Now it's more important relative to something else. So it's really understanding where your product sits in the hierarchy of needs, that whether it be the users of business aviation or even your own supply chain customers, that you understand those better.
That's brilliant, Charles. We could talk for hours. I think we'll do a future town hall on marketing and branding. Thanks so much for your time. That was Charles Porteous.
Thank you for having me.
President of CFL Group. No, thanks for being had. Thank you. And now, delighted to go to Kirsten Bartok. Kirsten needs no introduction. Serial entrepreneur and investor, managing director of Air Finance. Kirsten was involved in the launch of ExoJet Air Finance FlyFunder. She's been in venture capital, investment banker, ran corporate strategy and development for Hawker Beechcraft, whatever happened to them. And she's also an early stage seed investor. Kirsten, how are you?
I'm doing well, Al. How are you? It's nice to see you.
It's great to see you too. How's the homeschooling going?
Fabulous. If the child runs in the middle crying, just please everyone be tolerant. So super fun.
You're just lucky your kids are too young to play Fortnite. You know, that's it. Right, we've got a great question from Jean-Noël Robert at Airbus. How are tech investors behaving? Are they running away or looking for investments now?
I think they're not running away. The hurdle has increased and you got to divide it in the world. So if you're a venture capital fund, the capital is allocated beforehand. And there were a lot of groups like a Lightspeed, which was an active investor in the space in Valancy, had raised $1 billion funds. So there is money to be had. Traditional venture capital investors are out there investing. And what entrepreneurs tell me is that it's actually easier to get meetings because everyone's sitting at home in their living room and happy to take a Zoom. What we are seeing, though, is the problem that the barriers or the hurdles to get over to get an investment have increased. And what people want is more viability, more later stage and a real product out there. The other area that I think it's important to talk about is that there's a difference between a venture capitalist and a corporate investor like we have in our space, the Boeings, the Honeywells, the Airbuses, the strategics is what we call them in the finance industry. And that is a new world order. For the companies that were true aerospace, it has become a difficult internal debate to allocate money towards innovation and new startups when your resources have already constrained and your cash flow is tightened. So as people are having their senior leadership team and their take pay cuts and furloughing people, there is just inherently less money to invest in the space. And the tough part for us is that historically, the venture capitalists, the traditional venture capitalists, have not loved aerospace and aviation. It's hardware, it's regulated, it's difficult for them to understand. So we've been buoyed by the strategic investors. And I am concerned going forward that there is going to be less money available for the innovative entrepreneurs in our industry.
So starting with the strategics, do you see OEMs and tier one suppliers cutting back on their own research and development as well? Is this an opportunity for startups?
I think it is an opportunity. Look, I think everyone's internally focused right now and there's concerns and that concern about the broader market, especially around commercial aerospace, is going to slightly make people immobilized and a little more worried about, do I have a job? Is my seat here okay? And when that happens, you know, people tend to be less motivated and less innovative and just they're distracted. So you really have to divide the world and our industry up by the people who are mostly exposed to commercial aerospace and therefore really have to tighten their belts because the next couple of years are going to be extremely difficult. The people who are predominantly in the defense space, so sell to the DOD or other governments, they're probably doing okay. Those budgets haven't been cut. Things are still good. You're going to see a ton of innovation. We've seen the Air Force and the DOD step in and say, no, we actually want to put more money in here. We want to accelerate this pace. So we're going to have to look in different areas, and you're going to have to be, from an entrepreneur who is looking to raise capital, you're going to have to understand the nuances and be a bit more discerning about who you go to.
Can I be really negative, though? I think I wonder how long defense budgets are going to last for. Governments are issuing huge amounts of debt. You know, we've got furlough schemes. Great question here from Mike Francis at Kirsten. Are companies working on new tech having difficulty with development timelines because they're dispersed due to COVID restrictions? Are they going to fail to meet their funding milestones?
We worry to some extent. So what I'm hearing is that the engineers are a lot able to do coding. They have some people able to go in. If you look back at places like Kansas or others, they really didn't have a shelter in place regulations. When I'm talking to the companies that we're close to in California, they have a couple of their engineers. who are in the hardware side going in. What we do see is it has hurt on the flight testing side in many locations, and that there, when we were under shelter in place, it was difficult to do, get the hours that you needed. So I'm hearing good things that the FAA is engaged, even though they're behaving remotely. I'm hearing bad things in terms of that it will delay us a bit. But I want to be somewhat optimistic. I think I'm concerned about the money being available, but having lived through 2001, having lived through 2008, what we've seen is if you were able to raise capital and have money before the downturn started, you really have a lot fewer distractions now. So for the groups like Volocopter, Lilium, and I'm just talking the big guys because there are a lot of other good groups in the UAM side or the drone side or Joby, you know, it's a better time for them. They have their heads down, they have less distractions, they don't need to go to conferences, they don't need to talk to everyone, and they can just move forward and focus on executing. So for those companies, I'm very optimistic. I'm concerned about the companies that were low on capital, that were planning to go out for capital raise in Q2 or Q3 or Q4, because that is going to be much more difficult now.
That, you opened our Revolution conference, and I think all startups should be at conferences regardless of where they are in funding. But you know, there's 250 people have announced VTOLs, vertical takeoff and landing, electric VTOLs or urban air. Do we even need urban air mobility now that people aren't going into offices anymore?
I think we need it more than ever. And part of this was driven by the technology innovations, right? We have electrification, distributed propulsion, and autonomy. Those three technology innovations are revolutionary, and that is what really caused it. So then the point you got to is, okay, so how are those technologies going to be used? We are hearing a lot more these days about electrification of commercial aircraft or regional aircraft or business aircraft. So that's being talked about. That's been a bit of a change. But those technologies are coming on anyway. They're going to become more mature, and we are going to find ways to use them. So I'm as bullish as ever. We don't want congestion. We're still going to have one of the interesting functions that'll come out of COVID-19 is that people will probably live further away from city centers, and they will need a way to get there. So urban mobility, we started calling it urban air mobility, and I think now NASA led this and is calling it advanced air mobility, because it really just isn't an urban issue. It's an advanced air mobility that has application in many different areas.
And it's interesting, I was talking to Signature last week, and they were saying that one of the things they're noting is people moving out into the regions, and that's a great opportunity for traditional business aviation. Kirsten, could have talked to you for ages. We're going to have you back on the future one we're doing on the future of aviation and the revolution. Thanks so much for joining us, as always.
Be safe.
Thank you, you too. Finally, thanks, as we close down, thanks to all our speakers. Great to see you. Thanks to all the audience in the comments. If you'd like to vote on the poll, we're asking you, how often would you like us to run the CGI Town Hall? I'm delighted that no one has said daily, because I think that would kill me. But, you know, fortnightly seems to me like a really good figure. And with that in mind, we're going to actually skip next week because we're busy starting the run-up to CGI Global, our one-day 12-hour event, your chance to get up at 3 in the morning if you live in New York and stay up till 3 p.m., work through the night and meet with your colleagues. Thanks so much to everyone for joining us. We'll see you in a couple of weeks. We'll send an email out. Stay safe. Stay happy, stay healthy, and please stay watching. Thanks very much, and see you.